Hello and welcome to the Trading College podcast, where we look to bring you some of the most thought-provoking ideas about trading and what you could do to improve your trading.
Welcome to Trading College podcast. I'm Lee Sanford, full-time trader and founder of Trading College. Today I'm with Raj. Raj is one of our fully qualified technical analysts and trader and mentor and coach. Does absolutely everything, Raj. How are you, Raj?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. How's it going, Lee?
Yeah, really good, thank you. So last podcast we did, you interviewed me, and it's my turn to get you back now, mate.
Looking forward to it.
good. All right, so let's get started. Thank you, everybody that's listening to this and joining. Great to have you here. This is our brand new podcast, hoping that it's going down well. We're going to certainly do more exciting things as well going forward, and having more interviews, doing more technical, more learning stuff as well. But today we're going to just go through and just talk to Raj. Raj, the first question really, how did you get started in trading?
All right. I'm not even sure you know this answer or anybody knows this answer that we've got here, but I actually come from a fitness and sport background. So I used to play football, as you know, and then I worked in a gym in central London because I went to university in London, and I lived in Shoreditch. So I got a job in a gym in the city, not knowing anything about the city at all. The job that I got was in the JP Morgan building in Blackfriars. So all of my customers and all of the people that I used to train with and look after and stuff like that, they were all investment bankers, all traders, things like that. And that just piqued my interest. And I started making good money in the gym, and I started asking them where to invest my money. And that's how it started.
Was in the gym, physically working out in the gym? You're a trainer?
Yeah. I was a trainer, yeah. So I used to basically do fitness coaching with them. I used to teach some classes and, you know, all of that kind of stuff while I was at university. So I was doing it while I was at university. But then also when I left uni, I stayed working there for another 3 years. So that was how I actually just started in the industry. And then, you know, two of those guys that were working in JP Morgan, they left the company to start their own FX firm. My gym closed down on Tudor Street. It was called Top Notch on Tudor Street. And, you know, I started looking for jobs in FX, and they gave me my first step into the industry, really.
Okay, so then you've also got a football background as well, because you were really into football, wasn't you?
Yeah, so I used to play for Brentford Football Club when I was a youngster. I was in their academy, their centre of excellence. So that was, I used to love doing that. And then I basically went to try and get signed at a higher level in the Premier League. I didn't get signed, and like full time. So then I went to college and uni and stuff like that, because basically I just, you know, didn't want to rely on the football. So I played semi-pro football right the way through. I stopped playing semi-pro football when I was 26, 27. And and I've just been, you know, trading probably now for 11 years, coming into my 12th year.
So you got into trading. So what made you spoke to the guys at the gym, but yep, what sort of got you into trade? What was your next step to sort of do from there?
Yeah, so it was so super interesting. So when I was making money in the gym, because I was a trainer, they were paying me good money. I used to ask them in my trading sessions, are there any companies I should be looking at? Like, are there any shares that I need to be buying and stuff like this? So I was like, well, inquisitive. And we had really good relationships with these guys. And they were on really, really high level, like executive directors at JP Morgan, head of trading at JP Morgan, that kind of thing. And they used to tell me, they used to be, oh, you know, I'm looking at this company, I'm looking at that company. So I actually opened an account with eToro, IG Index, that kind of thing. And I used to buy them and hold them, you know, for a little period of time to see and make some money. But what caught me is that the shorter term stuff in the FX markets, that actually caught me. So while I was trading those equities, I used to see the adverts for, you know, Trade FX, or, you know, this is technical analysis in FX with IG Index, and, you know, and with eToro mainly. And you know, that's how I started it. So what I originally started to do in FX is I used to look for like a trend line break strategy in line with the trend. And I used to place the positions and go off to work, go to the gym to work for the whole day, come back and see if I won the trades or not. And I was doing really well. So I turned a $250 account into $4,000 just doing that. Just literally taking trend line break strategies in the direction of the trend and going to work and coming home and just basically checking if I won or lost the trades. Then I started, I thought I cracked it. I thought, oh, you know, well done. I'm now making good money trading. I took 2 weeks off from the gym to try and do this full time, and I lost half the money. I went from £4,000 up to £2,000 in the account. And I decided, look, I don't want to lose any more of that money. I felt like it was an accomplishment, me building it. And I paid for the, I paid for a course. I paid for the STA course.
Mm. Well, tell us a little bit more about the STA, because obviously we're both members. You do a lot more there than I do, but tell us how you got into that.
Yeah. So when I left the gym and I started working in the industry, in the FX industry, I started selling forwards and options. So I was literally a broker, like making, you know, 200 calls a day, hard graft, you know, working from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m, calling all my customers, booking in trades, you know, like real, real big companies. So like, you know, you've been in a gym, Lee, so you know the company that Concept 2 that do the rowing machines.
Right. Okay.
So they were one of my customers. They used to change euros to sterling and sterling to euros when they used to do their profits and losses and all that kind of stuff. So like I used to physically book in transactions with them. But my boss, he was the guy that used to write all the market analysis for the firm and do all of the kind of big macro kind of news stuff, send out the newsletters, do all of the forecasting. And he was a member of the STA. So his name was Steve. So he basically said to me, look, if you want to get in on my side rather than doing the hard graft on the phone and doing all the brokerage stuff, he was like, go and get yourself that qualification and we'll have a chat after. So I went, that's why with that money, the money that I made from trading, I went and paid for the STA course and I went and did the STA course. And there, you know, that kind of changed a lot of my professional career trajectory, because the boss who was there, that company was called High FX. So that boss at High FX then let me do a little bit more analysis work with him. And then I basically started speaking to more people at the STA, and I just started networking with more people. And I just moved higher and higher up in the industry, in the FX industry. So my background is really in foreign exchange, like anything and everything within foreign exchange. I've done it, you name it, I've done it.
Stuff. Okay, brilliant. And yeah, and that's obviously where we met. And yeah. You know, it's a Society of Technical Analysis. It's where we take our courses and our exams to become a qualified member of the Society of Technical Analysis. And we belong to IFTA as well, the International Federation of Technical Analysis, and so on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's good, isn't it? I mean, it's a good society. It's a good membership to be at. You know, it's okay. It's not as fast as the stuff that we do, is it?
No,
that
it's
that
not.
They do. It's very sort of.
So I would describe
it's not
the
retail
main,
traders.
No. It's not really. No, I would describe the main differences is they're going to teach you how to read a chart, how to do analysis. They're never going to be able to teach you how to trade. Mm. So their job isn't to tell you where to open and close positions and look at risk and stuff like that. They're going to teach you how to read the charts, what to look at from the charts, and trading and being an analyst. Two completely different things. I've done both jobs. I've worked as a trader in a fund and I've worked as a full-time analyst, and they are so different. You know, you've not got, you know, your skin in the game when you're an analyst. You're, you know, really looking at the market and making a call, really. And it doesn't matter whether you get it right or wrong. It does probably for your job over a long period of time, but there's less pressure when you're trading and you need to put money in your pocket and you need to put risk on the line. It changes your mindset completely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, most of the people there, you know, with total respect, are people that have been trained there are people that are working for somebody else and doing analysis for somebody else. Where what we do at Trading College is take all that information as well, combine it to our strategy, give it some substance with our strategies, and we, you know, we coach and mentor people that don't want to work for anybody, want to, you know, do it themselves. Okay, so next step. So just tell us a little about your trading style, Raj. I mean, you know, what is it? Because everyone's different. All the coaches here do a little bit different. What's your style?
Yeah, so for the life of me, I did try and be a day trader. I didn't have the backing and, you know, the education and the community of Trading College when I first started trading. So I tried to be a day trader, failed miserably. I can't do it. You know, it's just not in me. It's not in my personality. So what I started finding that worked for me was swing trading. So, you know, taking a position, doing my best not to fiddle around with it, and letting it run for a certain period of time. And I just used to find that I had the patience and I had the ability to not mess around with trades on a longer term scale. But when it was on a short term scale, when I was sitting in my PC watching the charts, I used to take profit too early. I used to, you know, take positions maybe that I shouldn't be taking. It just made me more anxious on a short-term scale. But now moving to a longer-term time frame is so much better for me. I'm way, way more successful than I was trading short-term than I am like a long-term. I'm a much better long-term trader.
How quick into, so from day one you place your first trade to knowing that, how long was that?
Honestly, it's not a great answer. it's 4 years. It took me about 4 years to work that out. And I'll tell you a quick story about how I worked it out. So, you know, I was day trading at home. I've gone full time to trade by myself fully at home twice in my life. So I was day trading at home and we had some people coming over in the evening. And my wife said to me, look, I need you to go and do the shopping. Do you mind going to the shops and all that? And I'm annoyed because I was thinking, look, you know, I've got to work here. But I thought, okay, don't worry. I set all my orders up. I walked away from the screen and I made more money that day being out doing what I needed to do, shopping and all that, than I did if I would have sat at the screen. And that was a light bulb moment for me. So I knew that if my analysis was really good. So I knew if I set up my analysis and I didn't touch anything and I didn't do anything with it, that was where I was going to make my money. So, and that was 4 years ago.
Why is that then? Tell us why. Go deeper into that. Why going away from your screen made you make more money than sitting at the screen? What was the thing that's different? What is, you know, it's an obvious answer, I imagine, but for the listeners.
Yeah, so since then, I've done a lot of kind of psychological profiling, soul searching, and all of that kind of stuff. So I didn't know it at the time, but I've learned that later on, especially being with Trading College and going through the DISC profile and the risk profile, those two things specifically. And it's literally my personality type. So my personality type is I get bored very easily. So I'm an I-style personality on the DISC profile. So I will always look to optimize something where it doesn't need to be optimized. I will always need to change something. I will get bored. I will keep looking for things to do with my trading if I'm staying there. And, you know, it did serve me well once because I worked as a systems designer. But when I realized that that was my problem, you know, that's when I pulled away and just said, look, take a position. Distract yourself doing everything else you can in the world, like write analysis, write market commentary. You know, you guys know I do that, you know, do that kind of thing, do economic analysis and leave your trades alone. Just fill your time up with other things that you should be doing, but leave your trades alone. And when I built the discipline to do that, that's when I started making money. You there, Lee?
Okay, so that's good. You found your style there, Raj. And I think if somebody can find their style, they get into trading, they need to find their style as quick as possible, what suits their personality. You know, they don't want to take 4 years, is a long time before you find your style.
Yeah.
So we really want, that's why working with mentors and people is great, because you can, you know, find your style really quickly. Okay, so next step then, you sort of found your style. You're obviously making more money doing that than your shorter time frame trades.
Yeah. So when we say like obviously the 4 years, I mean, I was winning trades within that period of time, but it's just when I got consistently profitable, it took 4 years. So the whole thing was I know I've come up as an I personality, but I think I do have a bit of C personality in me, because I always wanted to know what moved the markets, what made the markets tick. So I worked on a news desk, you know, at Rand Squawk, which is now News Squawk. You know, I physically worked in the market in terms of buying and selling real currencies. You know, I really had a appetite to basically work from ground zero to find out everything I could about the industry, fundamental analysis, technical analysis, everything that I could to see what really made these markets move.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think, okay, so let's just move on a little bit now then. You know, that's the history, you know, it's your background, that's great. And so, you know, you're starting to do well and, you got your own style of trading and so on. Let's just talk about, you know, somebody coming into trading. What's your experience with teaching people how to trade, and what's the challenges that people have when they come in? What do you see?
Yeah, so there's a few common ones. So one is obviously people have this mentality from the outside of the trading world looking in, where, you know, it's all kind of fast and furious, Wolf of Wall Street kind of stuff. And, you know, they think it's going to be exciting and all that kind of stuff. But actually, the best trading I've ever seen in my life is really boring. So so I think, you know, if you're trading well, normally, you know what your rules are, you know what your risk is, you know everything about your trading style. And that is quite boring to do on a long term. And I think that's, you know, the financial freedom is good, but the actual trading itself is not as glamorous as everybody makes out to be. So that's one thing that I've seen that comes up, you know, quite on a quite regular basis. Then I would probably say the next one is patience. So there's two parts to this. So one is that, you know, if you were training to be like a dentist, a lawyer, a doctor, a pilot, you give yourself time to train, and you basically, you know, you pay for your education to do that. I'd probably say people don't think trading is the same. They believe that, you know, it's something that, you know, automatically everybody comes in to make money from, because otherwise why would they be here? To a certain extent, they're correct, but it just doesn't work like that. The market will find your biggest insecurities and your biggest weaknesses as a human being and use them against you. So you have to learn that. And that's something that just takes everybody time. It takes one person, it could take 3 to 6 months. Another person, it could take 2 or 3 years. Everybody's different. So the patience in that sense. And then lastly, obviously, just patience in a position. I think when people are trading individual positions, I think they see the money moving up and down on the screen. And that makes people sometimes a bit anxious. And I understand it because I've been through it. And they're the three most common things that I see when new people join that generally, you know, we have to overcome.
And how do you help somebody? What should they do?
So it's really knowing themselves. So I have kind of three big steps that we try and do. So first thing is risk. So when you're trading, don't over leverage. Just control your risk, make sure your position sizes are okay, you know, make sure that you're comfortable when you're in your positions, because then you're not going to be anxious, you're not going to, you know, break the bank, you're not going to lose the house when you're taking these positions. So that's probably the first thing, is the risk. The second thing is probably the system, is making sure that, you know, you're trading the right system that suits your lifestyle, you're trading the right system that suits your time frame, you've chosen the right system that, you know, we use at the trading college that suits you. That's probably the second thing. And then the last thing, the reason why it's last is probably because it takes the longest, is the psychological part, is just really, really honing in on those skills. You know, every time when somebody's in a trade or when people are looking at their account, and so often, I always get them to message me, either email, WhatsApp, Coaching Cloud, whatever systems we use, to talk to me about why they're feeling these issues, so we can work through them, overcome them. Because, you know, there's not just one successful way to trade. You don't have to trade like me to make money. You have to trade like you to make money. And we need to find that. And that's a big thing psychologically to work out. I mean, I've got plenty of day traders that make good money on our mentorship, and I'm not a day trader. So how did we coach them to get there? We just looked at what suits them. We tweaked the strategy. We tweaked the money management, and we made sure that they could stay disciplined to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really important. It's such an individual game, isn't it? A business to be in. You know, everyone thinks it's just trading. You're doing a day trade. You've been a day trader. Okay, you're going to do it this way, or you're a swing trader. You're going to do it that way. But really, it's your personality. Your trading account is a reflection of your personality, really. And so, you know, the strategies are great. You know, there's thousands of strategies, but, you know, we use our trading strategies here at Trading College. But, you know, what we do, I think, well, is that we fit the strategies to the individual person and their personality style, which gives them a better success rate and a more of an edge. Because there's no point having somebody that's you know, very detailed, analytical, trading off a 2-minute chart or a 5-minute chart, because they, you know, they want time to analyze. So that's key, and it's really important. One thing that you're really hot on, Raj, I want to talk about it, is your risk management, your money management style, and the way you go about things when you're talking to our mentorship students. I remember on our last mentorship meeting, you spoke for a good time about risk management, money management. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I always make sure that there's a maximum risk of ruin in my trading account. So, for example, I never trade more than five stocks or five positions at one particular time. So basically, I've got a fail safe. So if the market gaps down, or if there's a big risk of movement in the market or something like that, this is if I'm in stocks, then I'm not overly exposed. I'm not going to lose my whole trading account because all the positions are going to turn against me at once. And this is just purely for experience because like I've been in trade sometimes and Trump comes out and says something stupid, or a central banker comes out to say something, that they shouldn't say at any particular time. You have to account for that element of randomness in life. Randomness and uncertainty are the things that you need to embrace as a trader, because as much as they could go against you, they can go for you. I've been in positions where there's been a merger and acquisition, and the market's just shot up. So you have to really, that's why I'm so hot on risk management, because I think you could trade any system, really, like especially our trading college ones. But as long as your risk management is good, you're giving yourself a fighting chance to work out which one's the right one for you.
That's interesting because the way you look at your success rate is much lower than my success rate on trades because I'm more managing the trades intraday because I'm more of a day trader, overnight trader, like 2 or 3 days I can hold stuff for. And I will add to the positions. My success rate is, way up in the 80-90% win trades. Yours is down lower, but you feel as though that's fine, don't you? Tell everyone why you think that's fine and how you see that.
Yeah, this is crazy. So, if I win 25% of my trades or 30% of my trades, I'm still going to be making money. And that's such a strange thing for people to hear because, when I'm in a winning trade, basically the longer I'm in a trade, the more money it's winning. So if I'm in like a stock like Tesla, Apple, or more recently Ocado and Adidas, those kind of stocks, if they're in an uptrend and I basically keep adding to those positions, those trades are going to make me a lot of money over a long period of time. Some of those positions I was in was for like 6 months, 7 months. Whereas, if I'm in a trade, let's say like a London Stock Exchange LSE, that stopped out really quickly. That stopped out within 2 or 3 weeks. I say that's quickly, not for
That's
you, but for me it is. That stopped
quickly.
out within 2 or 3 weeks. So I knew I wasn't making money there. So I could r my risk balance. So each position I risk is fixed on my account balance. So it's like 1 or 2% of my account balance. So I can lose 1 or 2 bits of risk. I can lose eight trades in a row, and lose that much money. But then on the ninth and tenth one, if they win, for example, they will win so much more than the eight trades that I've lost that I'm still in the money.
Okay, let's dive into that then. What about the psych? We spoke about psychology, but how do you deal with if you're going to lose eight trades in a row? How do you deal mentally with being a loser? Losing trade, not the losing person, but you're losing trades. I mean, that must be so difficult to handle the psychology around that.
So, it's through really confidence in the back testing and confidence in actually doing it to make sure it works. So, when before I was doing my back testing before I started trading this strategy, I would then basically see how big the winners got if I let them run. And there's a book by Annie Duke called Thinking in Bets. And she said this quote once, and it really resonated with me. And it was like, some people actually make more money off, sorry, lose more money off their winners than they do off their losers. And I was like, hang on, how can you lose more money off your winners than you do your losers? And it was the fact that they were cutting their positions when they were quite clearly in bull markets and going to run for a few years. So I went back through my trading history and I looked at where I cut my winners. And some of them, not all of them, I'd probably say 30% of them would have gone on to make me ridiculous amounts of money. And even if I chopped the rest of them off, all of the other winners, and just stayed with those 20% that I cut off too early, I would have made more money than I would have out of the whole book. So it really changed my philosophy to trading when I back tested that. So I back tested that and I thought, okay, let me implement it. So while I was trading still normally, I implemented it on a demo account, and that it worked on the demo account. It's a long process because it took 3 months to work it out. And then I tried it live on just a few trades. I tried it live on three or four trades, and one was Barrett Developments. I was in the S&P 500. I had six positions in the S&P 500 in the bull run between 2018 and 2019, and I basically was just checking whether that theory worked, and it, obviously ultimately it did work. I managed to catch a lot of positions within one or two bull running markets that I managed to compound on and stick with. And in terms of psychologically how to handle being a loser, it was basically just the proof is in the pudding. Once I did it, I handled it, because now I can take loser after loser after loser and not care. Because when I'm looking at my account balance for this year specifically, I know that Adidas and Ocado made me 30% on my account balance. And it doesn't matter if the next six trades lose, because those two have so far outweighed, you know, what's gone on in the rest of the trading book that I've got money to play with now because they won effectively.
Okay, so, but let's say somebody's starting today with $5,000, £5,000, yeah, euros, and then suddenly they have six losing trades in a row. Their account's down. What percentage would their account be down?
Okay, so if they were trading how I would suggest, so if they're a new trader with £5,000 in their account, they would only really be looking to take trades of £50 a trade. Really, 1% of your account balance, or maximum £100 per trade. So you only, that makes you limited on the markets that you could trade, because obviously with brokers, they have a minimum position size. But with, for example, a couple of brokers, they let you trade some of these big US shares or some of these big FTSE 100 shares at like 18 cents a point or 10 cents a point. So really, like for example, Walmart, which I'm in at the moment, which is going great guns, I started the position only 15 cents a point. But as it started growing and getting better, I started adding another 50 cents a point, 20 cents a point, as it started getting better and better. And I built myself into the position to end up it being a large position. So you have to stick to that beginning rule. So if you lose, you know, six trades, you've lost 300 quid out of your £5,000. And that's not too bad. That's the cost of doing this business. Eventually, you're going to hit one winner. You've just got to keep going with it.
Yeah. But if you're going to be long majority of that portfolio of stocks, you know, you're looking at the stock market to be up in general, the FTSE to be up, the S&P to be up, and we're in a bull market. Yeah. So what happens if it switches though and we go into a bear market, which it will do at another time?
Yeah, so there's sector rotation in when it comes to this. So for example, when we had a bit of a bear market, we were having a bit of trouble, you'd see stocks like Fresnillo, Newmont, you know, Yamana Gold, they would be doing well. And also staples, so like Unilever, you know, things like Walmart, the pharmaceutical companies like Hikma, Pfizer, they would all do well in bear markets, because at the end of the day, they will never lose their sales. They are staples, because people need them all the time. People need medicine all the time. People need food all of the time. And also in terms of risk, you know, people flock to gold when the stock markets are selling off. So the gold companies were doing well. So there's certain companies that you can look for that do well in bear markets. So that's the first part. The second part is that you can short markets as well. So with any spread better, any broker really, you should be able to go long and short. So if, for example, we're in a coronavirus situation like we are now, travel companies are going to be doing really badly. Energy companies are going to be doing really badly. So you can use the same philosophy on the short side than you can on the long side. But somebody asked a question to us today in our chat room, which I found really interesting, is like, you know, when the markets are having a rubbish day, but you still got a stock in an uptrend, how does that affect that stock? So what generally happens is if you're bullish on a stock and the market's not moving up, the general market's not moving up. So I'll give you an example. So say you're bullish on Apple, but the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ are not moving up, but Apple still have got a good setup. What you'll start to notice that in relative terms to the index, it won't fall as much as the index will fall. So say the index is down 3% on the day, that stock might just move 0.25% lower. So it really shifts with the strength and the weighting of the index. So you can find stocks that are having good setups in an index that's falling. So when the index starts to rise again, you quickly jump off the back on the back of that stock again, because in a bull market, that stock's going to do really well. When the market's stalling and we've got a brief retracement, it's just going to hold.
That's right. Okay, good stuff. And all right, so you like your stocks.
Yeah.
Would you predominantly trade the London Exchange stocks, or would you US exchange stocks?
Yeah, so I try and diversify this. So I have some in the DAX, some in the FTSE, some in the US, one or two maybe in Japan, China maybe. So I diversify it because I don't want to be too correlated to one country's economic situation. So like China's come out of this coronavirus situation really well. So Chinese stocks are doing better in some cases than some American stocks and some UK stocks. So I try and mix and match them, but basically I have a minimum size of a company that I'll invest in. So if the company is under 2 billion euros or pounds in the FTSE and the DAX, I don't trade them. In the US, if they're under $5 billion, I won't trade them. So in Japan and China, I do it on an individual scale. So Chinese stock market is, the companies are the largest really. So there is 10 billion quid, $10 billion rather. And in Japan, it's normally around the 2 to 3 billion pound mark. So I normally go for stocks like Nintendo, Toyota, the big stocks, Samsung in South Korea, things like that.
Okay, and you would do these through Spreadbet accounts, or would you do Sharedean accounts or CFDs? What are you looking at
Yeah, so
through?
the spread bettors are the best ones because of the tax implications. So you don't pay any tax on spread betting stocks, which is ludicrous, really. You could be in really good positions for years, really genuinely for years, and make really good money out of them and not have to pay any tax. So that's the main thing for me is the spread bettors. But if the company offers a really good dividend and, I want to put it in my ISA, my share dealing ISA, I will do that. There has been an occasion where like a mid-cap stock that offers a really high dividend, like Evraz, for example, Next offer a good dividend, BP offer a good dividend, like shares like that. I will buy in real shares because, the dividend protects you from some downside movement in the stocks because you get paid quarterly. But every most of the time, I'd probably say 90% of the time it's through a share, it's through the spread betting account.
I think to build true wealth, holding onto some stocks. I trade with through my SIP and my ISA, and shorter term stuff's in my spread betting account. And because I want to take that out and just put it into my savings account every month or quarter, mainly quarter really now. But leaving some of those stocks to run, and I don't open my ISA on a daily basis, my account, because I just want to look at the chart. If the chart's trending up still, I'm not going to mess around with the position. Going to let it go. And last thing I want to be doing is looking at it. And if you're a beginner, you don't want to be looking at it every moment of the day, because you're just going to get spooked out of the trade before it reverses. The market is there to spook you out the trade before it goes on a massive run. It comes down, it has a retracement or a reversion to the mean. The beginner panics. They trade their P&L. It goes from X amount to a lower amount. They panic, they get out, it reverses and pushes back up. It's classic.
Has there ever been an occasion where the stuff in your SIP or your ISA outperforms your day-to-day trade? Has there ever been, like a particular stock that you could think of where that's happened because you've just left it?
I mean, I've been doing that. I mean, I've been doing it for years, trading the Sharedean accounts. It's just for me, it's just a slow growth. It's
It
a slow
is.
growth. It is a slow, I mean, I do like the London Stock Exchange shares and the necks of these worlds. And they do move slower than the US. Volatility is higher over there.
It is.
But and I tend to trade them on the weekly time frame, Raj. I look at the weekly chart, look at the strategy with the PTS and all our Storyteller momentum stuff, and I'll trade it off of that. And that's where, and definitely, yes, a lot of there have been stocks in the past over the last, what, nearly 20 years have done really, really well. And I mean, a couple now which are going absolutely nowhere. And the thing is, as soon as I cut it, it'll just they'll explode higher. So they're the ones that I've just got to be a bit more patient. They're a much more long-term trade. I'll probably try and leave that for at least 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, that's a funny one, what you mentioned earlier, because I think some people, look at trading and think things have to be complicated. But you've seen on the mentorship days and stuff when I talk to the people, like how ridiculously simplistic my trading strategy is. Like, it's part of the momentum trigger, the things that we use at trading college. And I think, some people from the outside, when they see my P&L or ask me about my trades, they think I'm doing something different that I haven't told them about or something. Like I've got some knowledge that I haven't told anybody about. But it's not that. Like somebody asked me about Walmart the other day and Tesla. They were like, why did you buy those two? Why did you think that they were going to go? And I didn't have an answer for them. I was like, look, I used the momentum trigger and they just ended up rocketing higher. I was like, I didn't know that was going to happen. I don't have a crystal ball. I can't read the future. But the systems that we use following the trends, it really works. So,
It's
it's
the
just
game
one
of
of those
probability,
things.
isn't it? That's what we always talk about. It's a game of probabilities, and
It is.
but that goes. We're going to finish now because,
Yeah.
but that's what goes back to what I said before is that when people come into trading, especially, and I did this, and you've probably done it as well. You come in and you don't focus. They just chop and change from different idea, different strategy, different system to different system, and then they end up coming back to the start. A year later or whatever. And it's
Yeah.
that lack of focus that people, especially I personalities like us, me and you, and by the way, you're 85% I.
I know.
So that's huge, mate. So you enjoy life, Raj, very much, I
I
think,
do,
buddy.
yeah.
Eyes love a good time. but yeah, it's this chopping and changing. Just focus. If you focus on one thing, one type of strategy at the start, that's where the mentor comes in. Just make sure. You do that because if you're on your own, you're on YouTube, you're everywhere, and you don't really give time, things time to work out, strategies time to work out. But yeah, it's interesting. Okay, just a quick five things that you would advise to any new trader coming into trading.
Yeah, so the first thing I would be is just really choose your education provider, choose your
Trading
education
college.
really, really carefully. Yeah, I mean, like, I said when I left the professional finance industry and moved into retail, I said, like, literally, there's only four companies in the world, honestly, Lee, that I would have worked for, and yours was one of them.
There you go.
It feels to me, looking from the inside of the training industry outside, that it's a minefield. So, that's the first thing. Look at the coach, look at the people in the industry, look at how long the company's been going. Make sure you do your diligence about that. The second thing I would probably say is only trade what you can afford to trade with. I think trading out of desperation, if you need money and you're new to trading, that's a very difficult place to come from. It can go really well for you. Definitely it can. I've got people that are making, really good sums of money at the moment on my mentorship, but their mental state and where they are in their lives are, is suited to the style that they're trading. So that's also really, really important. So the third one I'd probably say is find the trading strategy that suits your lifestyle, because the way I trade now, the long-term stuff, suits my lifestyle, because I've got a daughter, I have a family, but also doing the mentorship sessions and doing my market analysis stuff the way that I do it, I don't want to be thinking about day trading positions running in the background, like on a DAX long or a DAX short in the middle of the day on a 15-minute chart when I'm talking to somebody about their trading psychology.
Yes.
I want to be a bit more relaxed. I want to pay attention. So suiting your trading style to your lifestyle is really, really important. I would say the last two. So one is just, I'll reiterate the risk management. Is the position So there's two types of risk management. So trade management on an individual trade by trade basis, and then account management. So those two need to fall hand in hand. They're two very different things. And then just lastly is really just try and have some fun, like you're doing this for, financial freedom. If you can, work out how to trade well, just make sure you pay yourself, make sure that there's a reason that you're fulfilling the reason why you're doing it. Make sure if you've done and had a few good trades, make sure you treat yourself to a holiday or buy something or whatever it is that you want to do, because then you'll realize why you're actually doing this job. It's easy to get so caught up in trading. You need to take a step back from time to time and work out why you're actually doing it.
Yeah, enjoy the process. Enjoy the process because it's great fun. And then you make money on the side of it. It's lovely. And then you get the freedom. Well, thank you very much, Raj. It's been an absolute pleasure, my friend. I think next podcast, next series, or next episode, I say you're going to be interviewing Dan.
Yeah, and we're very different, so that one should be interesting.
Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Cheers.